Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and check us out on Instagram. Instagram.com/greatdetectives. If you're enjoying the podcast, please follow us using your favorite podcast software. And I do want to encourage you to check out our other podcasts. And today I'm highlighting the amazing world of radio at amazing.greatdetectives.net. And in the month of March, we are doing a special mini-series highlighting women's stories during this Women's History Month that were told during the Golden Age of Radio. And also, on March 30th and 31st, we will have our Easter specials. So do check those out over at amazing.greatdetectives.net. as well as our archive of more than 200 podcasts that we've done over the years on a wide variety of different focuses, as well as holiday specials. Well, we are going to get into this week's Yours Truly Johnny Dollar Cereal, our final Yours Truly Johnny Dollar Cereal. I do want to remind you, if you are minded to listen to the entire cereal in one sitting, then pause the podcast now and come back on Friday, and you can listen to the whole cereal all in one go. But now, from October 29th and October 30th, 1956, here now is The Silent Queen Matter, Episodes 1 and 2.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Vic Carson, Johnny, State Unity Life.
Oh, what's on your mind, Vic?
Got a job for you if you're interested. I just received a report from our agent in Venice that...
Venice? Oh, I'd love it. Soft nights along the canals.
Venice, California, Johnny.
Okay, what is it?
Murder. Bernard Slade, age 56, penny arcade operator in Ocean Park. That's right.
Right next door to Venice. Go on.
Well, the body was found in living quarters at the rear of an arcade in the amusement zone. Killer unknown.
And?
Barney Slade must have been quite a movie fan. The police found his apartment plastered with photographs of the movie greats. Silent screen vintage, that is. At least a dozen of them were of Mavis Gale, a real queen in her day.
Yeah, the vamp type, I know.
Oh?
Oh, it's just a vague recollection, you understand.
Yeah. Well, the police also reported that somebody, the killer probably, had drawn a big question mark in red crayon over each of Mavis Gale's photographs.
Interesting, if it means anything.
We think it does, Johnny, especially since Mavis Gale is named as the beneficiary in Bernard Slade's insurance policy.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. To State Unity Life, Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Silent Queen matter. Expense account item 1, $210.65, plane, cab fare, and incidentals to Ocean Park, California. As soon as I checked in at my hotel, I got in touch with Homicide. Sergeant McKay, they said, would probably be down at the pier. I saved you cab fare on this one, Vic. It was a beautiful moonlit night at the beach. A warm breeze was blowing in from the Pacific. And besides, it was only a 3-minute walk from my hotel to the fun zone. A gaudy array of neon and noise, an occasional whiff of salt air seeping through the aromatic blend of fried shrimp, hamburgers, and popcorn. Business was good, and the penny arcade had its share of it. I headed straight for the blonde sitting in the change booth. She looked tired, faded. Hi, let me have a dime's worth of pennies, will you?
Real plunger, huh?
Oh, money means nothing to me.
Well, here you are. Don't spend them all in one place.
Well, you know, I might at that. This machine here looks mighty interesting. Lola the Farmer's Daughter.
Oh, it's kind of racy. How's your blood pressure?
Fine.
Then try that row along the wall over there.
That wouldn't do. How could we carry on a conversation if I was on the other side of the room?
Who wants conversation?
I do.
You don't look like the lonely type.
Never can tell, though, can you?
Look, you run along while I finish stacking these pennies, huh?
No, seriously. All I want is a few answers.
Well, I got more than a few, honey. What's on your mind?
Barney Slade.
What about Barney?
You work for him long?
Who wants to know?
My name is Dollar, Johnny Dollar. I'm an insurance investigator.
Oh.
I'd appreciate any information you can give me.
Hey, your company dropped a bundle on Barney, huh?
Well, that remains to be seen.
Now, Barney was a nice guy. Nice as they come. What do you want to know?
We'll just start anywhere.
You want to know about his friends?
Well, maybe after what happened to him, you'd better tell me about his enemies.
He didn't have none. Not one.
Oh, must have been quite a fellow.
He was, mister.
Okay, let's get back to his friends, then.
Just about everybody along the pier.
Anyone in particular?
Oh, Frank Jessup, for one, runs a concession just down the way.
Go on.
Sam Hegstrom owns a fishing boat. Then there's Gus Kanakos, Irv Goldstein. Like I said, Barney had a lot of friends.
Including you?
Including me.
How about Mavis Gale?
I don't know the dame.
Well, she used to be in the movies, the silent kind.
Oh, I heard about her, only I never met her.
Didn't she ever come around?
I never saw her.
Did Barney ever talk about her?
Not to me, he didn't. Why?
Why what?
Why should Barney talk about Mavis Gale?
Oh, I just thought he might have mentioned it sometime or other. Is that the door to Barney's apartment back there?
Yeah, that's right.
Mind if I have a look around?
That'd be up to Sergeant McKay.
Well, look, if he comes in, tell him where I am, will you?
Tell him yourself. He's back there in Barney's apartment now.
I walked on back and took note of the heavy padlock dangling open on the door leading into Barney Slade's apartment. The small living room was empty, yet it was crowded, too. Crowded with memories of the silent greats. Nazimova, Valentino, Pickford, Fairbanks, Meehan, Swanson, the Gish girls, Lon Chaney, oh, dozens more. Their photographs filling practically every inch of wall space. Mavis Gale was there, too, a big question mark in red crayon drawn over each of her photos. I moved through a narrow kitchen. The back door was wide open. I stepped outside.
Who are you?
Oh, Johnny Dollar. You must be Sergeant McKay.
That's right.
Yeah, your office said you'd be here browsing around.
So I'm browsing.
Is something bothering you, Sergeant?
Murder always bothers me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like those photos in there of Mavis Gale and the question marks on all of them. Yeah, that bothers me. You think the killer did it?
Could be. Let's go back inside.
Why not? Well, maybe Barney, huh?
Maybe Barney what?
I'm talking about the question marks.
Could be. Pictures belong to him.
Yeah. Yeah, he had quite a gallery here. Looks to me, though, that some are missing.
That's so?
Why, you know so, Sergeant. The wallpaper isn't faded as badly where they used to be. And there are a lot of tack marks, too.
Okay, so who took them down? Barney? He could have.
So could the killer.
That's right.
Have you found anybody who could tell you anything about him? The missing photographs?
Not yet.
Hey, Barney, keep a lot of money in here?
Twyla didn't seem to think so.
Twyla?
Twyla James. Blonde out front at the change booth.
Oh, yeah.
Barney was sort of particular about his apartment. Never let anybody in, as far as she knows, not even his friends.
Wonder why.
According to Twyla, he seldom used the arcade entrance. Preferred to use the back door.
Is that the one the killer used?
It was standing wide open when the body was found.
Well, who found it, by the way?
Twyla. When she showed up for work yesterday, the arcade was closed up, so she went around back.
Do you know when Barney was killed?
Doc figures around 3 a.m. Two slugs from a .38. One would have been enough.
Any signs of a struggle?
Yeah. Lamp over there was on the floor. That chair was turned over and this table had been upset. Pipes, medicine bottles, pill boxes scattered around.
Uh-huh. Heavy bolt and chain on the inside of both doors. Barney didn't have to let a visitor in unless he wanted to.
That's right.
Of course, he could have run into the killer outside somewhere.
Sure he could.
Only you don't think so.
Unless Barney was in the habit of walking in his sleep.
Oh?
When we came in and found Barney, he was in pajamas and bathrobe. The wall bed over there had been pulled out and was mussed up.
So it figures he was probably asleep when the killer tapped on his door. He got up and let him in. Yet according to Twyla...
The place was off limits, even to his friends. But she wasn't around all the time and didn't know all his friends.
He found some others?
I'd like to find one of them in particular. A man Barney referred to as the preacher.
Just the preacher? No name?
No. At least Sam Hextrom couldn't remember.
And this preacher, was he allowed into Barney's inner sanctum?
Sam's pretty sure he saw the two of them come out the back door one night, a little more than a week ago. Other times, he spotted them taking a late evening stroll along the oceanfront walk.
Mm-hmm. Did Sam ever talk with this preacher?
No. But he got curious after a while. Asked Barney about it. Barney said the man was a very old and dear friend. Let it go at that.
And you haven't been able to find out anything more about him, huh?
I'm still checking.
Well, it would sure be a break if you could locate this preacher. He might be able to tell us something about those missing photographs, what they were.
Might also explain why the killer took them. Have you seen enough in here, Dollar?
Oh, yeah, sure, I guess so, Sergeant. Hey, tell me, what does Mavis Gale have to say about all this?
I only got to talk with her just a couple hours ago when she returned from Palm Springs. She was pretty upset when I told her about the crayon marks on her photographs.
Oh, but naturally, she couldn't offer any explanation.
None.
How did she react to the news of Slade's death? Tears and such?
She's supposed to weep about it?
Why not? Barney Slade must have been a pretty good friend of hers. After all, he named her as the beneficiary in his insurance policy.
Oh? That's interesting.
What?
When I talked with Mavis Gale, she told me she never heard of Barney Slade.
Expense account item 2 and 3, $1.10, phone call and cab fare. The call was to Mavis Gale's home in Bel Air. The butler said if it was important, I could find her at McCartney's mortuary in Venice. Cab fare to Venice via what is laughingly called the Speedway, a one-way alley lined with backyards and garbage cans. It took us less than a minute to cross over into Venice, a boom that had busted. A melancholy mixture of old broken-down buildings and the sound of the sea. Crumbling bridges, moss-covered canals, of paved streets wandering disconsolately into sand dunes and ending where the money gave out. A dream that had kind of died of a broken heart.
Good evening, sir.
Oh, Bernard Slade, please.
Oh, yes. Mr. Slade is in the slumber room at the end of the hall.
Is anyone with him?
Oh, indeed. Quite a number of his friends.
Would you know Mavis Gale if you saw her?
The Silent Screen Star? Oh, indeed I would, at least I think I would. She was one of my favorites.
She hasn't shown yet.
But no, I... You mean she's expected?
So I understand.
Well, that's nice. Oh, that is nice. I didn't know she was a friend of Mr. Slade's.
Oh, you know most of Barney's friends, huh?
I know most of the people along the pier, and they were all his friends.
Well, how about one called the Preacher?
The Preacher?
Mm-hmm.
Well, naturally, I'm very well acquainted with many men of the cloth. And if you could tell me his name...
I don't know it.
Oh.
Look, you have a visitor's register here, don't you?
In each of the slumber rooms, yes. Just inside the door.
Oh, thanks. Where did you say Mr. Slade was?
Down the hall, last room on the left.
The room was crowded with friends who'd come to pay their respects to Bernard Slade. I eased over to the visitor's register and gave it a fast rundown. There was nothing to indicate that a minister was among the mourners present. Then I heard the hall door creak open. There she was, Mavis Gale. Certainly not at all what I expected a vamp of the silent screen to look like 30 years later. Slender, trim, in a smartly tailored suit, and even more attractive than the photographs I'd seen of her in Barney's apartment. She moved down the center aisle to the casket and stood there for a moment. As I walked toward her, she suddenly turned, her eyes wide and staring, her lips moving silently. Then she crumbled to the floor.
I understand you've been trying to reach me, Dollar.
That's right, Sergeant.
Okay, what's up?
I got some news for you. Mavis Gale was once married to a small-time movie actor named Tom Sanford. Seems he was murdered during a hunting trip in the Sierra some 27 years ago.
So?
Mavis Gale just identified Barney Slade as Tom Sanford.
What?
Same man, Sergeant.
She's still at the mortuary?
Yeah, the manager's office.
I'll be over in 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Ocean Park, California, to State Unity Life Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Silent Queen matter. Expense account continued. Item 4, 10 cents, a cup of black coffee from Mavis Gale, queen of the silent flickers. While she drank it, I elbowed my way past Barney Slade's friends gathered in the hall just outside the mortuary office and walked out to the street to do a little quiet thinking. I didn't have time.
Excuse me, Mr. Dollar.
Hmm? Oh,
Is it a fact about Mavis Gale? I mean, she was Barney's wife?
Well, where'd you pick that up?
Well, Mort thought he heard her say so.
Mort?
A manager of the funeral parlor. You were in his office, helped carry Miss Gale there. Is it a fact, Mr. Dollar?
How do you know my name?
I was gabbing with Twyla earlier tonight. She's the girl at the change desk in the Penny Arcade.
I know.
Then I seen you and Sergeant McKay come out of Barney's apartment.
Who are you?
Frank Jessup. I run the mermaid bit over on the pier. You know, 3 baseballs for a quarter and you...
You try to dunk the doll in the water tank, yeah.
I figure Mort heard right that Mavis Gale used to be Barney's wife.
Well, that's what the lady said.
Oh, how do you like that? Old Barney married all this time into that Mavis Gale, old-time movie star. Never breathed a word of it to any of us. Sure can't get over it. And him being a picture player in the old days, too.
Yeah. Do you recall ever seeing her around the arcade, Mr. Jessup?
Nope. Think I would have recognized her tonight when she came in the mortuary. Real handsome woman.
Can you think of anyone Barney might have told about his past?
Well, I don't think any of his friends knew Mr. Dollar.
Including Twyla James?
Why do you ask that?
Has she been with him long?
Close to 5 years. What are you driving at, Mr. Dollar?
Barney was still a pretty good-looking guy.
She liked him a lot.
And vice versa?
Barney never talked it over with me.
What did he talk about?
Well, fishing, mostly. And pinochle. He was crazy about pinochle. Best I ever played with.
You play often?
Average couple times a week.
In Barney's apartment?
Barney was kind of funny about that. None of us ever set foot in his place. Most of the time, we played over at my bungalow or on Sam's boat.
I see.
Say, you being an insurance investigator and all, I was wondering, was Mavis Gale...
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Jessup. This is Sergeant McKay. Well, you said 5 minutes, Sergeant. You made it to 3.
She's still in there, Dollar?
Yeah.
Nice turnout of Barney's friends. Only they're all out in the hall.
Well, things got sort of frantic when Mavis took her nosedive. They wanted to find out why, I guess.
Did they?
Mm-hmm. Mort knows it around.
Is he in the office with her?
And her chauffeur. His name's Ronald.
I'll send them both out. I want to talk to Mavis Gale alone.
I don't think you get much out of her. She really fell apart at the seams. As it turned out, I was right, at least about McKay not getting much out of Mavis Gale. She came out of the office a minute or so later with McKay and the chauffeur on either side, and I went along with the mourners into the street. They helped her inside the big blue Cadillac, and she slumped down as far as she could get in the back seat, covered her face with a handkerchief. Then she was gone.
Okay, you people, break it up. You came here to see Barney, remember?
Sergeant.
What is it, Dollar?
Would you happen to remember Mavis Gale from the old days? When she was a star, I mean.
Yeah, I guess so.
Was she a pretty good actress?
I'd say she was.
Do you think she still is?
If you're referring to that fainting spell, Dollar, you tell me you saw it.
It looked pretty genuine.
So?
I just wondered is all. Just wondered. Expense account items 5 and 6, $4.60, one morning newspaper, and cab fare to Mavis Gale's Bel Air home. Now that Barney Slade had been identified as Tom Sanford, husband of the old-time movie queen, the affair was splattered all over the front pages. There was also a complete account of the 27-year-old murder case in which this same Tom Sanford had presumably been killed with a shotgun blast during a hunting trip. The big wide gates of the ex-movie queen's estate were locked when I got there, but there was a phone close by. I picked it up, leaned on the buzzer. No answer. Nothing. Then I saw the car coming down the drive. I recognized Sergeant McKay at the wheel.
Morning, Dollar.
Hi. You have a special pass to this place?
If you're figuring on having a talk with Mavis Gale, you better put it off. Doctor's orders.
Still suffering from shock, huh?
Yeah, and I figure she's leveling.
Hmm. According to the newspaper, she and Tom had a pretty stormy time of it during their brief marriage.
She was a star and he wasn't. Maybe that had something to do with it. She was also pretty popular in the film colony.
Oh, Tom had a few buddies, too. At least four. The men who went on that hunting trip with him.
The case was investigated pretty thoroughly. They came out of it clean.
You know, it'd be interesting to find out who wanted Tom Sanford dead, though, wouldn't it?
The fellow hunter who got his face blown off by a shotgun blast wanted Sanford dead. Only apparently Sanford beat him to the draw, right?
Do you think somebody might have hired that would-be killer who instead became the victim?
What are you getting at?
So the person who did the hiring thought the mission accomplished, but then recently learned that Tom Sanford was still alive, posing as Barney Slade.
You really have an imagination.
So this time he does the job himself.
Or herself.
It's possible.
Look, I know Mavis Gale stands to collect $25,000 insurance.
Unless.
Oh, sure, unless you can hang it on her. Two attempts on hubby Tom Sanford.
I'm not trying to hang this on anybody, Sergeant. The insurance company hired me to turn in a report, and they'll pay off according to that report. I just want to be sure, that's all.
Okay, relax. If you're going back to the beach, get in.
Oh, thanks. Why do you think he did it, Sergeant?
Why do I think who did what?
Sanford. 27 years ago on a hunting trip. Why do you suppose he planted his identification and clothing on the man who tried to kill him and vanished?
Who knows? Maybe he was in a jam. Like the idea of letting the world believe he was dead.
And how about those question marks on Mavis Gale's photographs? A tie in there, maybe?
We've been through that. Barney could have made those marks himself.
Well, then here's a thought. Barney, or Sanford, whichever you want to call him, might have wondered, could his wife have hired the killer? And is that why he drew those question marks?
I thought you decided the killer drew them.
All right, assume the killer drew them. Why?
You tell me.
Well, it would certainly attract attention to Mavis Gale, wouldn't it?
And eliminate her as a possible suspect?
As far as Barney Slade's death is concerned, yes.
You're really determined to go after this woman, aren't you?
Look, McKee, I told you all
Okay. Assuming the killer drew those question marks to direct attention to Mavis Gale, why would he want to do that?
I can make a guess. Can't you?
Yeah. Could be blackmail. But why wait all these years?
For the simple reason he just picked up a little information recently. Maybe he got it from one of the men who were on that hunting trip.
Think they're still around?
Expense account item 7, $10.50, cab fare and tips. It took me that long to find Milo Martin, actor's agent, one of the men who had been on that hunting trip 27 years ago. He operated out of a plush suite of offices on the Sunset Strip. He wasn't in, but his secretary, a friendly and eager little doll named Lana, gave me a list of places where I might find him. I finally did. Out on a ranch near Chatsworth, where a movie company was filming an epic. Yep, a Western. What else? Milo Martin was short and round. He wore cowboy boots, dungarees, no shirt. He was sitting on a wide flat rock, sunning himself.
Oh, yes, Mr. Dollar. I read about it in the morning paper. It came as a tremendous shock. Tom, alive all these years, it's incredible. It's fantastic.
Well, according to newspaper accounts, you were the one who first discovered the body that day 27 years ago.
A horrible experience, terrifying, and never forget it. We had been searching the hills all night, and then in the cold gray of dawn, there he was in the ravine. Tom.
Only it wasn't Tom.
But the police are certain. I mean to say that...
Miss Gale positively identified the man known as Barney Slade to be Tom Sanford.
Running a penny arcade in Ocean Park. It's incredible. Well, then who was the man I found in that ravine?
We don't know. We may never know.
And he wanted to kill Tom. But why?
You have no idea why anyone would have wanted to do away with
him? No, of course not. Oh, I knew Tom was a wild sort. He never got along with most people, but, well, to resort to murder.
You were his agent, weren't you, Mr. Martin?
Yes, yes, I was. I must confess I only took him on as a client to please Mavis.
Oh, you also represented Miss Gale?
I did. She still is a truly wonderful person, Mr. Dollar.
I understand the two of them weren't getting along too well.
Oh, that would be putting it mildly, Mr. Dollar. Was one frightful row after another. Wild, hysterical sort of row.
What did they quarrel about?
Well, Tom was quite a gambler, and he also drank rather heavily, and he also fancied himself as quite a ladies' man.
And this made her sore.
He was also extremely jealous.
Oh? Mavis ever give him good cause to be?
No, of course not. Oh, he was always imagining all sorts of fantastic things about her. Actually, she was very much in love with him. That was my impression, at least.
Tell me, Mr. Martin, those other men who were on the hunting trip, are they still around?
Well, let me see now. There's Trev, for one.
Huh?
Trev, that's Francis Trevelyan, used to be Miss Gale's cameraman, independent producer now. His pictures aren't very good, but they make money.
Well, how about this Jarvis Pocket?
Jarv? Let me think now. Oh, excuse me. You ready, doll? Okay. That's Saul, the director. He's a friend of mine.
Look, about
you. You like stagecoaches, Mr. Dollar?
Well, I can take him or leave him. Look, what
about
this?
Come along. They're finished up here. We'll ride the coach back to the ranch house. It's only a few miles, maybe five.
In this contraption?
Oh, you'll love it. All right, now, here. Get aboard, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, brother. Hey, it's not too roomy, is it?
Okay, doll. Let it go. How do you like it, Mr. Dollar?
I know how John Wayne feels.
Let me see now. You were asking about...
Jarvis Pocket.
Now, faster, doll.
Oh.
Faster.
Oh, come on now. Expense account. Item 8, 81 cents. One bottle of rubbing alcohol. It was late that afternoon when I got back to my hotel, but before I could use the alcohol on my aching bones, the phone rang. Johnny Dollar.
McKay here. This time I got news for you, Dollar. You ought to be real pleased.
Wait till I sit down. Oh, on second thought, maybe I won't. Okay, Sarge, let's have it.
Mavis Gale said she didn't know her husband was alive all these years, that he was using the name Barney Slade, running that arcade in Ocean Park.
So?
So maybe she didn't tell us the truth.
What do you mean?
We got a witness, Dollar. Someone who saw Mavis Gale hanging around the Penny Arcade two nights before the murder.
Now here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, a bowl of lentil soup, and I almost wind up in a cemetery. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Adrian John Doe, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Sometimes I forget that the silent film era was in living memory for many people during the golden age of radio, because the world had changed so much from the 1920s, particularly by 1956. Yet someone Bob Bailey's age would have been 14 when The Jazz Singer was released, and it'd be a few years until talkies totally display silent films. In some way, it's appropriate the last great golden age radio serial would center its plot around a silent film, as you've got an art form that had its popularity in decline paying tribute to another art form that had seen a decline in popularity. Although I don't think audio dramas ever quite went totally away in the same way that silent films did. The language used to describe Venice was evocative, and it might be among the best descriptions we've heard during the serial era. A boom that had busted, a melancholy mixture of old broken-down buildings and the sound of the sea, crumbling bridges, moss-covered canals, a dream that had kind of died of a broken heart. Narration is one of those storytelling tools that many modern audio dramas eschew for a variety of reasons. Certainly, there are many noir stories that are over-narrated. And you can point to many old-time radio shows that took narration to absurd levels that don't serve the story and are more amusing distractions from the story than anything else. But what we get in The Silent Queen Matter is an example of well-written and well-delivered narration that paints a vivid picture that's probably worth hours of sound design and effects work. I did find John Daner's character in the Western movie lot amusing, if for no other reason than his starring roles in Western radio programs like Frontier Gentlemen and the radio version of Have Gun, Will Travel. Well, now we turn to listener comments and feedback, and we start over on Spotify, where Vicky comments regarding my comments on the imperfect alibi matter. And Vicky writes, "Thank you for speaking about disabilities. I appreciate hearing someone say that disabilities can vary. It's information many need to hear." Well, thank you so much, Vicky. We have praise for the episode 2 cliffhanger on the Primrose matter, where Harrison writes, "Now that's a cliffhanger. I'm dying for Friday." And then we have a suggestion regarding the meaning of the McCoy from the Twice Told Tale with the McCoy and yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Dino writes, "Don't forget about the Afro-Canadian inventor Elijah McCoy of the 19th and 20th centuries. Due to my profession, I must bring him up." And on the same note on YouTube, Lenny writes, "The real McCoy was an automatic oiling system for steam-driven engines. It was invented by a black man." Elijah McCoy was an incredible individual. He was born in Canada to fugitive slaves. He went to Scotland to study and was a mechanical engineer, but the only work that he could find where his family settled in Michigan was as a fireman and an oiler at the Michigan Central Railroad. And he invented and patented an automatic lubricator, and it displaced most of the other such improvements and was used on most of North American railroads at the end of the 19th century. And Booker T. Washington recognized him in his book, The Story of the Negro, as having obtained more patents than any other black inventor. Having obtained 57 separate patents, mostly dedicated to lubrication. Now, is Elijah McCoy the definitive source of the phrase, the real McCoy? Not really. There are so many theories, and I found an article that lists some of them. In addition to Elijah McCoy, some of the proposed theories include someone from the Hatfield-McCoy family feud of the 1880s, products of the Nelson-McCoy Pottery Company in Ohio, booze supplied by Prohibition-era rum runner Bill McCoy, whose product was said to always be of the highest quality, Joseph G. McCoy, the cattleman who laid out the Chisholm Trail, a Pennsylvania wildcatter of the name of McCoy who diverted nitroglycerin from job sites to safe crackers, who in turn dubbed the explosives he supplied the real McCoy to distinguish them from the homemade, less reliable concoctions they sometimes use. Mrs. McCoy of a 19th century Irish ballad wherein she thrashes her husband, thereby proving herself the real McCoy. The products of a British pharmaceutical company that were much in demand by addicts in the U.S. after passage of the Harrison Narcotic Act of 1914, with the appellation spreading to any commercially produced drug product to differentiate it from black market drugs of dubious origin. Arising from rivalry among branches of the McKay clan in Scotland as to which was the most valid, with the name of one clan's leader, Ree McKay, turned over time, morphing into Real McCoy, a corruption of the Real Macau, slang for pure heroin, the best of which supposedly came from Macau, a corruption of the Real McKay, a slogan used to advertise the products of whiskey distillers A&M McKay of Glasgow. American welterweight champion Norman Selby, known as Kid McCoy. Now, many of these origins have dubious histories at best, or there's just not a whole lot of documentation. The earliest one that you can definitively confirm is to a brand of whiskey from Scotland, with the slogan, a drappy of the Real McKay. Now, whether it goes further back to a clan dispute in Scotland, which would put it in medieval times, or whether Elijah McCoy's lubricator was ever called the Real McCoy, and served as the impetus for transforming the phrase from the Real McKay to the Real McCoy, we just don't know. But having him in the discussion is worth it if for no other reason than we get a chance to learn about an incredible inventor. The star of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, was a subject of some conversation. Harrison wrote, "Wow, Harrington Lund's voice sounds so foreign after listening to Bailey's voice in my head for months." And Mark emailed in, "My opinion is that there was only one Johnny Dollar and his name was Bailey." Well, I appreciate the comments. I will say that we'll probably continue to hear Lund and O'Brien as we continue to do the Twice Told Tales, since Johnny Dollar really was the king of script reuse. I'm hoping to do one where we do like a thrice or four times told tale and hear something where it passed through a bunch of hands, including from different versions of Johnny Dollar. Of course, I tend to think of Bailey as the best, but I'm less someone who views him as the only legitimate Dollar. And I guess that might be because of when I came to listening to Johnny Dollar, which I had not listened to it at all before 2009. And by then, there were dozens of episodes in circulation for O'Brien, Lund, and Kramer, as well as all of the Russell and Reddick episodes that we have currently. I appreciate each of them for what they brought to the role. And without O'Brien and Lund's work on the series, it's unlikely that it would have been revived for Bailey to even get a chance at what he and Jack Johnstone were able to accomplish. But thank you so much. Appreciate the comments. Now it's time to thank our Patreon supporter of the day. And I want to go ahead and thank Jesse. Jesse has been one of our Patreon supporters since March of 2016, currently supporting the podcast at the rookie level of $2 or more per month. Thank you so much for your support, Jesse. And that will do it for today. We'll be back on Friday with the conclusion of this week's Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar serial. And coming up next Tuesday, listen for the return of Dr. Tim Detective. Join us back here tomorrow for Dangerous Assignment, where...
Sir, good evening. I'm Leanvold. May I help you?
I have a reservation. The name is Nick Francis.
But how can that be, sir?
Look, what goes?
But Mr. Francis is already in his room.
What?
Yes, sir. He checked in an hour ago. Went upstairs immediately.
I don't wait for the elevator. I take the stairs two at a clip, and 40 seconds later, I pull up at the door of room 21 and try the knob. The door's unlocked. There's a gent curled up on the floor, probably the phony Nick Francis. He has a surprised look on his face. I guess he wasn't expecting the knife that's buried in his back.
I hope you'll be with us then. In the meantime, do send your comments to box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and check us out on Instagram. Instagram.com/Great Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.